How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You found Atomic Android Radio.
Hello and welcome to In Universe, where we talk the ins and outs of all our favorite fictional universes. I'm Andrew.
I'm Adam.
And today we're talking about a pretty special fictional universe. We're talking Pathfinder, but not specifically just Pathfinder. We're talking our Pathfinder's little homebrew worlds. We're doing a little fan fiction episode, I guess.
Whoa, not quite fan fiction.
Well,
there's
I mean,
a slight difference.
There, yeah, no, but
we're talking constructed world, our constructed world.
TTRPGs is nothing but playable fan fiction.
Yeah, look, fair enough. I mean, I guess at a certain point, it's kind of just like really heavily changed, like Tolkien fan fiction.
Yeah. I know of most of it.
Oh yeah, just to clarify, we know D&D is the big boy. We play D&D, we started with D&D, but we tend to play Pathfinder.
What we started with was really barely D&D.
Well, yeah, but like
but that's what we use.
I've played
The main I'll talk about this. The main reason we started with Pathfinder is because right when we started getting to RPGs and I went to buy the books, I was with my mom who said, "Oh, you can't get Dungeons and Dragons because your dad thinks you'll be like doing Satan worship." I said, "Mom, that's stupid, but these books of Pathfinder
are cheaper,
so I will get these."
Oh yeah, exactly. And it's the Satanic Panic was a weird time.
Yeah, no, I hate it. It's, and I hate that people still
like
think it's a theme, like Dungeons and Dragons is...
My dad has a strange cognitive dissonance where he knows that the Satanic Panic was bullshit, like pretty much all of it, but certain facets of it he still believes in. Like there's the idea of, and we're already off topic, but this is just on my mind right now, repressed memories.
Yeah.
And that kind of shit, like the idea that, oh, I like repressed the memory so far, and then the therapist helped bring it to the surface, and that's how I knew I was in a satanic cult. That's not true. There's actually absolutely no scientific evidence that repressed memories are like a thing like that.
Yeah.
There's a ton of evidence that therapists trained people to lie. Like there's just documented cases of them being caught, going to jail for it, and fined, of being like, "Yeah, I told them that they had a repressed memory, and
because they're a psychologist, exactly.
They were like, "Yeah, I guess I do remember that. Weird."
Yeah, no, and like, there's, I don't know. I if someone like came to me and like they had this real tragic thing that they talked about being repressed or whatever, I wouldn't like just be like, oh no, you're lying about that, you're wrong.
I guess I should be more clear. I didn't mean that the individuals were necessarily lying.
Yeah,
they thought they had repressed memories. The therapist is just somebody who lied to them to convince them they had repressed memories.
It's for me, it's a real ghost situation where I'm like, I believe you believe that,
right,
but I'm not sure if I believe it whole thought. But Satanic Panic, no, that's not, although one thing there is one thing about the Satanic Panic whole deal. The reason my mom wasn't into it is because she had a personal experience of it where I guess her brother was real into D&D, and then they found her brother like shirtless in like the woods or whatever, playing D&D or something, and it was real cult like. And I was like, Mom, I don't know what your brother was doing, but it wasn't Dungeons and Dragons. Yeah, that doesn't
sound like Dungeons and Dragons. Unless they were also LARPing, I guess.
Yeah, that's what my theory is. Him and his friends were LARPing, and they just were caught at a real inconvenient time.
Yeah,
and
but he had like his shirt off. Well, yeah, because it's easy to look culty if you're in the woods with a robe and like knives or whatever, but like that's also just LARPing.
Yeah, that's just playing pretend. But anyways, we could get back on topic.
Yeah, Pathfinder, our constructed worlds for Pathfinder.
Yeah, our worlds for Pathfinder. I guess we could talk about how particular, because I know how we started our world. Let's get the, so we play RPGs a good deal.
Yeah, we're big nerds.
Adam here is usually the DM, but every once in a while I'll do it. And so we started with just unconnected games and whatnot.
Yeah, real early on we had no idea what we were doing.
Yeah, it was kind of like just make it up on the spot and whatnot. But later, once we started learning what we were doing, we kind of were able to tie things together and whatnot. And I guess we could talk about that sort of deal. Let's start with this. How does your world, your Pathfinder world, like as a planet or whatever, as a system, as a place work?
What do you mean, how does it work?
Explain your
all right. I have a system, I have a setting for Pathfinder.
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for, setting.
That I call Iselpon, which is backwards.
I've never heard that before. That's pretty lame.
Yeah, okay.
Fucking little anagram lad over here.
Not an anagram, just backwards. Which I got from when I was first looking into fantasy stuff. Besides Tolkien, there's, I'm blanking on the author's name, but he has the world with the Mouser, which is like the super like old time, around the same time as like Terry Pratchett fantasy. Mm-hmm. With a rogue and like a barbarian, and they work together and they're friends. And his world is called I'm gonna butcher saying it. It's like, it's nowhere backwards. Mm-hmm. So it's, what is that? That's
I don't, yeah. Well, there's definitely a who. No, there's not a who in there.
No,
because it's not W H. It's H W O, and whatever. Yeah, I get the point.
Yeah, Erewhon or whatever.
It's nowhere backwards. Yeah.
Nice. And so I was like, look, that's fine. I couldn't think of another name, and I didn't want to stick with Galarian.
Yeah.
So my world basically. The way it was first developed, I guess, is I took the settings of a few games that I played and was like, well, kind of need to know where they're going if they're going to be moving. Because instead of like a dungeon raid or one that is held in a specific area, I had a game that sort of just wandered heaps. And it started to get to the point where it was like, well, unless I wanted to have just like an infinite massive world where I just kept making up random stuff every single time, I better start writing down some of what I've got. Mm-hmm. So it started with a small like plain area where they got to a small town called Nearly There, because I couldn't think of a town name on the spot.
No, that's my favorite thing about particularly RPG world building, because when you're doing it for like a book or a story or whatever, you have the time to sit there and be like, okay, what's a good name for this place? But when
oftentimes you're improvising on the spot,
you can't like spend 15 minutes like being like, all right, guys, let me stop for a second.
Yeah, let me research like naming conventions. Now, to be fair, I'm currently reading the novel Ringworld by Larry Niven, mm-hmm. which takes place in space. It's sci-fi, whatever. But one of the planets they go to is called We Made It.
Hell yeah. Because that's pretty good.
Like colony ship crash landed on it and they were like, mm-hmm. we made it.
Fuck,
and that's
yeah.
just the name of the place. Yeah, no, that rules. That rules. I like that heaps.
That's some fucking Douglas Adams shit right there.
But yeah, so you get to Nearly Their town, and they were on their way to Next Town, which was the city that they were going to.
Yeah.
And it was there that I was like, all right, well, I already specifically made these two near each other. Now, what's near that? And so I just sort of expanded radially from there.
Mm-hmm.
And then when things, I started having games that like came and intersected with that, where I had like two games going at the same time. And originally they weren't anywhere near each other, but then eventually they became close enough that I was like, all right, well, this is weird.
Yeah.
And it eventually started to codify into an actual setting that had like its own history, when in one of those games, there was this big like war between Next Town and Nearly There, in which the player characters were huddled down in like a last stand siege, as they were like, all right, townspeople of Nearly There, we have to fight the next town and win. And they did win, but in the process, a big magical super weapon that was basically a big glass eyeball on wheels that fired massive lasers.
that makes sense. That checks out.
Was detonated as basically a small magical nuke, and it put a crater about like 100 feet down where Nearly There was. So Nearly There is no longer a town. Now it's a massive, perfectly circular crater that eventually filled with torrential rain and became Nearly There Lake.
Fuck yeah, that rules.
And that's there on my map right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm quite fond of it. I really like Nearly There Lake.
I love a bit of like player involved history in the location. That was a big thing about building my world, was it had to kind of revolve around like what happened and how to explain what happened. Cause when we first started, we kind of just like, cause none of this was planned out or anything. We played like the same games, and we would switch who would run and use kind of like the same characters, and the same characters would enter.
Yeah. Like in the beginning, we'd all be in the same world.
Yeah. So we were in the same world. And then when we started to like flesh out everything, we kind of like wanted to take things in different directions and didn't want to like,
don't want to step on anybody's toes.
Yeah. We don't want to insert anything that the other person weren't like. So we kind of set out this thing where our worlds used to be one.
Yes,
world.
That's right.
Yeah. So it was one world, and then there was some sort of unknown magical disaster.
We worked in our inexperience with the game into the history of the world, which is something that'll come up again later.
That's one of my favorite bits, is how much like we're like, we didn't know what we were doing, but it's a part of it. That was on purpose.
It's in universe. Name drop.
Fuck yeah, dude. Is that the first one?
I think it happened once before, but I can't remember.
No, but that's one of my favorite things about the history of our world. Especially because we've drawn you had this crazy fucking
I had a map that was specifically just all right. I have terrible penmanship and no artistic talent whatsoever. That's just a baseline fact about me. But I needed to write down and draw my map so I knew where things were. And so I took three pieces of printer paper and just roughly sketched everything out.
No, I think it's four pieces, right? Because there's just one only also three. On the bottom, right?
Only three. Oh. There's one on the top, one in the middle, and one to the side.
Oh, yeah, that's what it was. It's an L shape. I was thinking it's a T shape.
Yeah, it's a backwards L.
Yeah, you had this map where it was like this L shape type deal. And nobody saw that for the longest time.
It was just for me.
Yeah, it wasn't a problem. But then I drew out my map. And I was like, oh, it, I'm having fun, but I'm kind of done already with my map. I'll be willing to draw your map. You just need to send me the one you have.
And
the
I was like,
photos.
Look, man, it won't be easy.
And that was the most fucking Da Vinci Code deciphering I've ever had to do. Because I've had to try to decipher your just handwriting before.
It's not easy.
And it's not an easy task, but it's doable. Like, you could be like, all right, there's A's in there. Yeah. And I think I see an H. And
the worst thing about my handwriting is I will never write the same letter the same way.
Yeah, no,
in the same
you don't.
Word.
That's the worst thing is how inconsistent your handwriting is.
It's like I do, you know, when murderers are like the Zodiac killer
take
the print
glue,
out of it and
they
glue it. I just do that naturally.
And so this map was just random, like, bullshit scribbles and shapes. And the only labels on it are these terribly handwritten, words. I'm like, oh, my fucking God.
To differentiate topography, I would just do different types of scribbles and
shadings.
Which
and
makes
it looks
sense
like
to me
because
I did it. Mm-hmm. But if you didn't know what you were looking at, it would look like absolute somebody threw up graphite onto a page.
But anyways, I figured it out and we got it to a place that we were like happy with and we could like label and whatnot. But as the whole point of all of this is one of my favorite things is both of our worlds. So they're like a planet. They're both
a round planet.
An Earth.
The Earth is round.
Yeah. And but each one of them just has one side completely all water and missing. Because that's where the other side
ocean.
Of the world was. And like it's been so long that people are just like, I don't know.
The Great Ocean?
That.
Whatever.
And but
the
that
other
was,
connective tissue specifically is the floating islands of Flog.
Yeah, we both each have the floating islands, which were caught right in the middle of the blast. So like it got torn to pieces or blast or whatever.
Whatever
happened.
Look,
it got
honest.
Torn to pieces. Yeah, we don't. If we
it comes
ever
to it, we can
if,
explore.
Yeah,
it, but
if we
not.
Ever explore it, we'll let you know. But it got torn to pieces and it's filled with all this magical energy that it's flying in the air. So we both had, that's like the connective tissue. So
Flog is I think like Danish or something for flying. I remember we googled that.
I think it might have been Swedish.
Look,
for
your guess is
air
as good as mine.
I don't remember. If you know, let us know. But I thought it sounded funny and it fit. So so that was when I was that was one of my big building blocks for the where my world started. It was that, and then the other thing was I got the book, the Pathfinder book, Rise of Rune Lords, and that started in the town of Sandpoint. So I started in this whole town, and that Sandpoint, I got maybe one adventure into the whole Rise of Rune Lords
I think we did the
campaign
one dungeon
it was like the beginning where there was a festival but it starts off in the town of Sandpoint, and Sandpoint had became so important in my game, and nothing else from that book really has other than that town, where I'm like, well, I guess I gotta put in like the whole area of Galarian, like the whole mass of Galarian.
Yeah, so like what the continent that is the main world in Paizo's Galarian,
yeah,
is on your world.
Yeah, it's on my world, but it's just a small portion up at the top. I have, other than that, it's all these massive like continents and whatnot. And like if you zoom in, you're like, okay, and this is all the shit that's in Pathfinder right at the top here. And which is, I really enjoy that direction because I could have my cake and eat it too. Yeah. Like I could use anything from the source books and put it in and everything. But also if I want like a bullshit, like this is magic mushroom land, I could do that as well. Like I really like that system I got going for it.
It's a good approach. I went fully constructed. I'm not really connected to Pathfinder much at all, besides using it as like the baseline system.
Yeah,
personal preference. I don't really like using modules.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I always like because I will hear about a module and I'll be like, oh, that's like a really like cool sounding adventure, I want to like do that. So what I'll do is I'll download the module probably like by someplace online, and then I'll look through like the beginning of it.
Not an admission of guilt.
Download online that I bought and paid for, of course.
Hey.
I'll look through the like first beginnings of it, like I'll go through the like what do you call that, synopsis of the adventure, that's yeah. What I was saying, think of, and then I'll be like, oh okay, I'll do play this adventure, and then I just won't play that adventure, and then like a long ass time later, like months later, I'll be running a different adventure and be like, oh, that was a cool idea, and then just toss the synopsis into like whatever we're doing.
That's one of the biggest things with like world building or constructed worlds or being a DM in general. What is it, true innovation is learning how to hide your sources.
Oh yeah.
You pull from everything, anything you watch, read, look at, listen to, it ends up in your place somehow.
Yeah, it's like you'll just steal whatever. Like, I know people like they'll get like this sort of feeling. Like, if you're listening to a D&D podcast and you're like you're watching Roll 20. No, that's not a thing. What's the
Roll 20 to the website?
Yeah, Dimension what's 20? Critical World? Critical was the Role. One I was thinking. I don't watch that one, but I know that's popular. And you're like, oh, I hope my players or whatever never see this because they'll know I'm stealing. Everybody's stealing. Who cares? Just have fun. Nobody's judging.
No one cares,
you.
Really. On like Twitter might.
Yeah,
care
no. There'll be.
Out, but
if you have an asshole of a friend who's like, you're not original, you just stole this. Yeah. Then don't play with that person. They suck ass.
Seconded. Yeah, don't. But yeah, everybody does it. The important thing is to put your own spin on it, because it's like,
yeah,
at this point in human history, there is no original idea.
There's no
anymore.
Original. If you came up with a wholesale original idea, you're probably the most creative person alive.
Yeah, and you probably haven't done anything with it.
That too.
But like, yeah, because like every single idea, any possible even spin on an idea has been done before.
Yeah.
You just gotta get good at it.
Yeah, I do hate the feeling when you think you've come up with something
and
original.
You find out it's not.
Yeah, and someone's like, you for example, you put it into a game or you mention it to a friend or whatever, and someone's like, oh, that's like this, and you're like, what? It's like beat for beat your same idea.
Yeah, that it sucks.
It takes the wind right out of your sails.
It does. And look, if you're not that good at hiding your sources, or for whatever reason you don't want to, just go wholesale. Like, I just, part of my world is a big desert that I just pretty much wholesale stole from Dune.
Oh yeah, I've had some experiences in that desert.
It's not pleasant, and that's on purpose.
It's not a fun place to be.
Yeah, I guess we can start getting into specific topography, at least that we think differentiates it from like any Pathfinder world. Like I have the big desert with big sandworms because I love Dune and I'm a
No, that's real good. One we both have that is a really cool idea that I want to see like and more like I want to see it as a place in something. We both have the a crystalline forest.
Yes. So my idea for the crystalline forest was it was a regular piece of land. And then back in like the Hyborian age of my world, there was a massive magical war. Like just every sort of adventurer, they all had magical items and blessings from gods and yada yada, to the point where, again, basically a magical nuke went off.
Yeah, there's a lot of magical disasters going on in our world.
Nukes are cool, and I use them often. So that basically magically irradiated this little plot of land, like about a forest. That just irradiated as shit, like magic Chernobyl. And the things that grew and like survived that are forever changed by it. So all plant life has crystallized, but still grows and is still alive. So they are like living crystals. The ground is littered with magic. You can still easily find magical items just like worked into the wood of a tree or buried under a rock.
Yeah, it's so cool.
Crystalline dragons. There's scant few, but a handful of like crystal specific creatures in the Pathfinder bestiary. So those are there. It's also a fey forest. So I've got a lot of fey specific creatures there. And a personal favorite thing of mine that I really like about it is because it's so magical and the trees are crystal and all that, the entire forest acts as an arcane focus.
Yeah,
any arcane spellcaster who walks into that forest doesn't need their focus, doesn't need components, they can just cast willy-nilly.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite things because we played an adventure one time where we were in wizard school.
Yes,
that was like right
school in my crystal.
Yeah, I think it was like right on the border of it or something.
It's actually it's towards the end of it, like towards the back border of it.
Mm-hmm. And so, like, you don't have like any like arcane focus or anything in the school or whatever, so you can't use that kind of stuff in the school. But to teach you, and so you learn, like, yeah, go out into the forest and, like, do magic adventures, and you could do magic and stuff.
I think that's just a really cool idea. I mean...
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting idea.
One thing I like about having a constructed world and doing stuff like that is you can then take that and then extrapolate it further, at least logistically speaking. Like, because they work as an arcane focus, the best arcane focuses in my world are often carved from or taken the, from yeah. there. Mm-hmm. And then they sell those, and then that's, like, part of the trade of it. I guess the other big thing for worlds like this, beyond, like, oh, there are elves, and there are orcs, are, like, the actual societies within. Like you have the full-on Galorian just as basically one continent.
Oh yeah.
Cuz I have a lot of different like societies in mind just cuz
yeah, I got like I went and like I got a note, a Google Doc somewhere that just has all of this bullshit on it and everything. But like I went like race by race and everything and be like, what's their deal going on right. here and how do they interact with the other races and the races of their name, like elves, I have just everybody has like elves where they're like, oh, I'm better than it, like these other races because like I'm pure and everything. But I have a whole level of societal racism between all the elves,
yeah,
like wood elves
don't and like other elves,
yeah, it's not even like there's the basic like wood elf high elves don't like wood elves and shit like that, but there's also like full-on like just same kind of racism we have here where light wood elves don't like darker wood elves because their barky skin is oak and not mahogany.
That's pretty good. I do like that.
Yeah.
I tried to stay away from like too much racism in my world.
Yeah,
just because I don't like playing characters.
Yeah, I don't want the players to like use racism as an excuse to be a dick.
Yeah.
But I do think a lot of, for one, you could like be like, yeah, I mean, I'm a white straight guy, so it's not like I'm like, oh, I'm an expert on this. But like, I do think, and a lot of literature and stuff can use it as an interesting, like, what do you call the word? Like a smaller conflict that they have to deal with.
Interpersonal struggles with.
Yeah.
Yeah, I find it's an easy antagonist thing. If you need, it's the same reason why nobody feels bad about Captain America beating up Nazis.
If you want your bad guy to if you want your players to hate your bad guy, make them racist or sexist or whatever.
My go-to,
make them a bigot.
Like, for like go-to, these are the bad guys, are high elves, because I have a lot of different types of elves, but the only ones that are explicitly racist and look down on any other race are the high elves. That's why they call themselves high elves.
And
they're not racist, but they're just straight out and out bad guys, are the slavers of Zeal. They're a country that's entire gross domestic product and entire economy is based
built around slavery.
Capturing other people and enslaving them. That's their whole thing, and they are just bad guys. There's no moral gray there. They're just bad guys.
Like, that's because you could have like the moral gray of like an elf or whatever, like even a high elf who's like, hey guys, maybe this racism isn't bad. But if you have somebody taking part in the slavery society and like not being like, oh, let me leave this or let me do something about this, then they're labeled a bad person. America, like 90 years ago.
Yeah, look, it's part of my United Human Kingdoms.
That's right. Roughly. Wait, what's 90 years ago? 30 years ago is the 90s. So like 60 years before that is the 30s.
Past slavery, but still bad.
Yeah, a bit. Chuck on a couple decades. Slavery lasts.
Look, like a long time in America. Too long. 200 years, I think, about in America. From 16 something when we first landed.
Okay,
here.
We've had slavery more than we haven't had slavery. Let's put it at that.
Is that true? Oh no. That's bad. And then, I mean, let alone the systemic racism after that.
Yeah, no, it's not great.
Fuck, America kind of sucks. Sorry if that hurt anybody's feelings.
To be an American. Anyway.
Anywhoms. That's not a constructed world. That's our world.
Yeah, that's sad. That's God's constructed world.
Other like specific things that I think I like, at least, I have the pirate city of Castoff. Mm-hmm. That I find fun. It's Madripoor from Marvel Comics, or I don't know if there's a real life this, but like a hive of scum and villainy kind of deal.
Yeah,
it's where the pirate king lives. It's where the black market like is a physical place.
Yeah, it's, you could go to the black market.
One thing I really like about it, that I say almost more as a tourist thing for it in universe, but it's just the true thing that I made. The entire city is built on a grid, which means that almost every street is a crossroads, because selling your soul to a crossroads demon is supposed to be easy on Castoff.
It's pretty fucking good.
I just think that's a fun thing to have as part
of the world. That fits real good with Pirate City.
Yeah.
I like that the pirates are organized to build the city on a grid too.
They were like, look, it's got two benefits. Building on a grid is just good city planning, and you get to sell yourself to a demon on every street corner.
I wonder if it's like one a pop, so like
each, like a fucking crack dealer, each demon sits on the corner of a street crossing.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
It was like, hey, I'll sell your fame and riches for your soul.
And then the demon's like, hey, I'll give you more fame and riches for your soul.
Don't talk to that guy.
Fuck off, dude, that guy sucks ass.
Hey, look, man, if your deal isn't good, I'll just go up a block and get a better deal.
Look, I know what my soul's worth. I don't need to take this shit.
That's one I really like. I haven't got a whole lot of chance to use it as like a setting for an actual game until relatively recently, when I had a quasi pirate themed leg of an adventure.
Fuck yeah, dude. Pirate peg leg themed.
Whoa. That's a good one. It's fun.
All right, keep saying what you're fucking saying.
You get a lot of like, I don't know, organizations, I guess, in a constructed world. Mm-hmm. Like, what is it? In mine, I have a one of my players is a druid, and they do a lot of stuff with druids. And so I had a group of like powerful druids. Because one thing I really like about D&D and then D&D style worlds with Pathfinder, with the level systems, you really have an easy way of a hierarchy.
Yeah.
Like if you want Thieves Guild or Assassin's Guild, you just have various levels of rogue.
Yeah, and that's easy. This guy's the boss because he's the most powerful.
Level 20. Yeah, exactly. And so I was like, you don't see a lot of that with druids. Like you get like the College of Winterhold, where it's very powerful wizards, or like most armies have really powerful fighters.
Yeah,
churches have clerics, that kind of thing. You don't see that often with druids.
Yeah, because they're for the most part, like they're usually stereotypically like hermits and alone
and
off in the woods somewhere.
Groups, it's like a druid circle of like
it's like a
few
cult.
People. Yeah. Which, look, maybe that's what your uncle was doing in the woods. He was
a druid?
Part of a druid cult.
Fuck, that'd be cool.
In
game. That's cool.
That's cool, but still. So I had a one and such group, what I called the Parliament of the Birds, which are, because druids can, you know, wild shape and change into animals. So these are a group of powerful druids that all transform into one specific kind of bird. And one, they usually have one specific type of elemental like affinity that they like.
Yeah.
And that's like the governmental body or organization of druids. each one of them have lower druids that like work for them and do stuff and so on and so forth.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's pretty cool. I like that. I like animal-based like groups.
Yeah,
like a court of owl type deal, or yeah. Like I always thought like a murder of crows would be a cool little fucking group. Although I always saw them as like a biker gang.
That does sound like a biker gang.
Yeah.
It sounds like a pretty lame biker gang.
No, it is pretty lame. One fun thing about like playing in these RPG worlds, like that homebrew, is they have a lot of stuff that's like, because they're magic and everything, you can do a lot of stuff that's like, okay, this is the world, but like it shares the same space, but it's changed a little bit. Like I have a lot of fun in my world with how I've built the astral plane.
Oh, and yeah.
So the way I have the astral plane is they're kind of like ghosts and everything. So like they share the same space, but they're not seen. I mean, there's certain stuff that lets you see and everything. So they're not seen and they can't really interact with the physical plane and everything. So you go into a bar, like a tavern or whatever, and then you drop into the astral plane and you'll see a bunch of like astral like entities, like ghosts or whatever, like sharing the same bar area as a place. And there's like a ghost bartender there. We've had a really fun adventure a while ago.
I must apologize. Somebody is mowing their lawn like right next to my window.
That's pretty fucking
it's very
good.
Annoying.
I don't think I can hear it, so I think it might be good.
Okay. Just if you do hear it, I apologize.
But yeah, we had I had a lot of fun running a game not too long ago where the party kept dropping in and out of the astral plane. Oh, one very fun thing about that game was my Adam here, he played a character who was we referred to him as Just Daredevil.
Yeah, on the sheet I wrote Just Daredevil on the name
because he basically built Daredevil. And what
yeah, I got like blind fight and two weapon fighting and stick fighter. I was a brawler. And
so one of my favorite things about this was a big part of the adventure is dropping in and out of the astral plane, but he didn't know when it happened really all that much because he was blind. And it's not like you get like a slight tingle or whatever and whatnot, but it's not like it was a noticeable thing. But yeah, that sort of thing's a lot of fun because I have like my own like, oh, these are the creatures that live in the astral plane. Like I have astral dinosaurs, which is
that's cool.
Like I was a big part of that plot. Or there's like astral dogs that have the ability of blink so,
dogs.
I think I took the idea of blink dogs and I changed
and
it
split
more.
Them up. Yeah, I remember that.
So like these dogs, they have the blink spell, but they're from the astral plane, so they blink into the physical plane, and people see these, and that you get like shit like, oh, there's a fucking ghost dog out at the edge of town, don't go that way.
Oh man, being that afraid of a ghost dog.
Well, they are like physically there and everything, so like they've probably like mauled people and shit. And you watch a ghost dog maul someone and then disappear from existence, you gotta be spooked. Afraid.
Back to like player choices and stuff interacting your constructed world.
Oh yeah, one of my favorite things about an RPG world, because an RPG world, it's very easy to think about it as this is my world, but it's very much this is our world. Like, yeah, I kind of have the most say and everything.
Yeah, I set out the pieces, but you decide where to move them kind of deal.
Yeah, but the actions of the players affect like the world as a whole, which you don't get that in any, like in video games, like they have choice branches and stuff
tend to be pretty binary.
Yeah, but that's, oh, is the world like this or like this? And novels, it's whatever the like author says. But RPGs have this very unique thing of, yeah, I made this world, but I don't know these or how it's gonna turn out, because I have these like things I can't predict for going out and interacting with everything.
And one I liked that involves that game with just Daredevil is I'd had a character previously in this same world by the name of Sybil Starkweather.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so let me give a bit of backstory on Sybil Starkweather. So it was just supposed to be a one-shot. And I think it was on Adam's birthday.
Yes.
And we were looking for something to do. I'm like, oh, I had this really fun campaign where I'm like,
just got the book, a bunch of the magic items.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm like, it's just a dungeon that I threw all these powerful magic items into. And it's so like the party could go and have a bunch of like just meaningless fun with these different magic items. But for some reason, one of the, I think it was three players, right?
Only two. Was
it was only Marco. Two. Yeah.
He was on our show once before.
Yeah, if you remember back at the Fallout episode? Yeah. Our friend Marco was there. But I guess he didn't know what the like whole idea of the game was or whatever. Or he
was
decided to go against
that
it.
All the items were cursed and they would just destroy his character.
So yeah, his character was like, oh, I don't like magic items. I'm not using magic items. So instead of each player getting, I think it was like a list of 20 magic items I had spread throughout the dungeon, Adam just got all of them. And it's like all the big equipment ones. Like it was the deck of many things,
even
the
things
knuckle
that
bone
wouldn't fit for
of,
my character.
Like
I was
Fickle
a wizard.
Fortune. Yeah, you were a wizard.
And he was a barbarian. And so there was stuff like demonic armor that like,
yeah, that legitimately turned you evil because I did curse.
Several
of
them
were
cursed. No, that's right. He got one item, the first one, which were magical shoes that cursed them to dance.
Oh,
he was like, the rest of these items are cursed. I'm not touching them.
Yeah. And so like from then on, Adam just got every one of these magic items and they really lopsided between. Yeah, this sucks ass, but it's real powerful.
And they started stacking on each other to the point where the curses were negligible.
So like,
and I just didn't care about curses. I was like, I was already vaguely evil as a character. I was like, look, I'll take the curses. I don't care.
Yeah. And then he just became more and more evil and just went insane. One of the big items was I forget what it's called, but it's this key that gives you access to a flying castle.
The Storm King's.
Storm King's castle, I think, or whatever it was. So he got this.
I got the castle, but I couldn't control it. And I had the Philosopher's Stone, which gave you one wish. And I used my one wish for control of the Storm King's castle.
Yeah, that's so he made this character, he got all these items, and he's just this mad. So there's a whole like trope of a mad mage throughout.
Yeah. That happens all the time.
I think D&D
like
and Pathfinder.
The example of the mad scientist before science was really a thing. Yeah, the mad magician.
I think D&D and Pathfinder have like big specific ones, but for my games now, it's Sybil Starkweather. It's the mad mage who flies around in this floating castle, and he has an orb that drops in and out of the astral plane, so the castle like both blinks into the astral plane, flies around, blinks out.
And it was perfect because my name was Sybil Starkweather, one as a reference to those Nebraska murders, but also I had like all lightning based spells. I was full storm lightning themed. And then I got the Storm King's Castle.
Yeah, you get a Storm King's Castle. Oh, one of my favorite things is that one of the curses did make that him blind.
Yeah, a crown that made me blind.
But he had a familiar weasel that was
named
David Attenborough that he could see out of. So his eyes were a weasel on his shoulder. So he'd be like, if he's having a conversation with you, he's looking off to the left, but the weasel's making hard eye contact with you.
Oh man. And that character came back later on in the game with just Daredevil.
Yeah, because there was a big thing you guys needed, where you needed to have like constant access to the astral plane. You were getting there for someone, so you had to go do a heist on Sybil Starkweather.
Right. And that was very fun.
That didn't work out. It ended up getting another returning villain in my games, Bimbo the Gnome.
Oh, fuck Bimbo the Gnome. I hate
He's straight from like the very beginning of my games. And he's basically, you know, that classic devil salesman where he's like, oh, I'll give you this, but secretly it will fuck you.
Yeah, the monkey's paw deal.
Yeah, so he's very much that. And he's shown up on nearly all of my games.
I can't think of a game I played where he hasn't shown up at least once.
And so through the player's actions, he ended up possessing all of Sybil Starkweather's castle and everything in it. We haven't been like able to like go beyond that, but I'm very excited for that sort of deal because I have some big plans.
I'm unhappy.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things too. So Adam's main character throughout this game
is my longest running character.
Is a small Irish gnome known as Chet Faker.
Yeah, singer-songwriter Chet Faker.
Yeah, and so he's kind of Bimbo the Gnome is kind of his main antagonist, not kind of, sort of. But throughout all these other players, they keep making shit worse for Chet Faker off on the sidelines. And I think that's just glorious. I enjoy that so much.
Chet Faker has been through two different Saw parodies.
Yeah.
Lost a bunch of stuff.
He's been through Saw parodies. He's been sent to the future because we played Starfinder, which
is normally the sci-fi future of Pathfinder. We just extrapolated from our worlds.
Yeah, which it was very easy for me because I did use Galarian and everything in mine. So
changed Starfinder for mine as well.
So it was like, oh, this is kind of already all set up for me. So again, I get to have my cake and eat it too, just on a much larger scale of instead, oh, that's happening on this continent. It's, oh, that's happening in this solar system on this planet.
Yeah, and again, I decided to make my own cake from scratch again.
Yeah, no, it's neither way is better or worse. It's just
whatever
you like. Sometimes I like using other people's work that they put a lot of effort into. And I'm like, yeah, I'll take that. Thank you. Sometimes I'm like, well, it would be funny to put in.
Yeah, Chet Faker was in that first Rune Lords game we did.
Yeah, that's where Chet Faker came. He lives in Sandpoint. That's why Sandpoint became such an important like part of the world.
I would fish for bass there.
Yeah, he would.
And my famous meal of bass and milk.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
Like Chet Faker's unpleasant. But fun.
He's very fun. He's usually Chet Faker happens in solo games when we can't get a group together. It's like, all right, I'll run a game for you for Chet Faker. And he's got one of my favorite NPCs, Paul Adon,
who's a paladin.
He's a paladin.
Although funny if he was something else.
Yeah,
Paul Adon the cleric.
That's pretty good. One of my favorite bits was because Chet Faker, because he's the player and
I'm
focus
a bard,
on
by
him.
The way.
Yeah, he's a bard. He was getting really powerful to the point where I'm like, oh, I need a way to kind of like have Paul like catch up and keep up with him. So I had this adventure that centered around him becoming a holy champion. And there was a checklist of like everything you need to be a holy champion.
Yeah, there was a little boxes you needed to tick to become a holy champion.
So, who was it? It was the goddess Lomde in Pathfinder, who, again, I took and made my own kind of deal. You had to, like, have done a good deed for her. You had to be wearing her symbol. You had to...
wield a sword, I think, was one of them.
I think wield a sword. I there was a whole checklist. And throughout the adventure,
Chet
Faker...
And the last one was be bathed in her light.
Her light is how it was activated. And Chet Faker just so happened to like check every one of those boxes. Like he had a rapier.
On the mission with
he was on a mission And it had to do with these paladins who became corrupt. They were paladins of Lomde and they became corrupt. So like they took them out and Chet Faker killed one. And he's like, this is a sweet fucking cape. And
Chet he ripped Faker off. Is a fun character because not only does he loot like a normal player, but he loves to just tear things off of an enemy and wear it. So, I have like, a Minotaur skull that's like my pride and joy.
So like he ripped off like the guy's cloak and put it on and that had the symbol on it and like he had his sword and taking out the like corrupt people, he did a good deed for the goddess. And then at the end when he like everybody comes around and they start thanking the Chet Faker and Paul for their good deeds as a way to like get everybody to look at him, Chet Faker climbs onto Paul's shoulder.
Chet Faker's like, quite narcissistic.
He's like, oh yes, thank you, I know I'm awesome. And it was right then when the goddess bathed Paul in her light to make him a holy champion. And because Chet Faker just so happened to check off all the lists, I went,
I got sick holy champion splash damage.
He's also a holy champion now, I guess.
Because you realized it mid-thing. Like, I was standing on your shoulders, and then you described the light hitting Paul, and you were like, wait a minute. No.
Yeah, I had to reference it. I'm like, oh, well, yeah, he did that. That's there. He's in the light. And so just... Chet Faker snuck his way into being a holy champion
I didn't even follow.
Yeah, but he has since used that to his advantage. There was one where he went to the future. He was in Starfinder. And because he was a holy champion for the goddess Lomde, her followers, they don't really get holy champions anymore. So he was basically like,
I was like high, a huge celebrity.
He was like a like royalty to them. So he was like, oh, give me like, bring me all the money you can. Give me new armor. Let me fly you big ass ships around. I control my own army. Also, one of my favorite things about that was he made a deal with, it was basically the devil, and like the deal was he got these sweet new demonic powers, and he's like, yeah, I'll give you my soul next week. And then he traveled
back in time
thousands of years. So he's like, oh, now I don't have to give up my soul for thousands of years
and a week.
Thousands of years and a week, however long that lined
up. I'm a procrastinator, it's fine.
And so that's one of my favorite things about Chet Faker is he's so unpredictable. And like by the time I realize it, I'm like, wow, that just kind of just changed the whole way my world works, huh?
He is unnaturally lucky to the point like it's ridiculous. It's so fun.
Yeah, no, it's one of the best characters we got going on.
Before we run out of time, there was your longtime character Merlin.
Oh yeah, so it was actually our first
first characters we've done.
Yeah, all right, so we didn't know how any of the systems worked. We didn't know like basically anything. I just listened to some D&D podcasts and I said, hey Adam, I would like to start playing Dungeons and Dragons, are you interested? And Adam responded, no, that's some nerd shit right there. I will never play Dungeons and Dragons. He's like, I may be a nerd, but I could look down on the nerds who play Dungeons and Dragons and go, that'll never be me.
Look, I need to have something below me for my self-esteem. Now I look at LARPers. I'll never LARP.
But
mark my words.
I finally got him to play, and we had no idea what was going on. And because of that, like, my character was basically a god in he played.
Because I was so overpowered. Could explain. He was like, I got the spellbook app and I can do the spells in it.
Yeah, I had the spellbook app that just listed the spell. Like, they didn't even really describe the spells or anything.
What they did, it just, it ain't either.
Yeah, and it didn't describe what classes the spells were for or what they did. It was like, oh, this is a spell and this is what level it is. So like I would be like, oh, I use tidal wave, I guess that makes a tidal wave.
Yeah, he just could do whatever.
Yeah, and they were D&D spells too, so that was before we settled on, oh, this is the Pathfinder system,
right? And it was very fun, even though we had no idea.
I didn't think
we even really knew how to add bonuses. It was all straight rolls.
Yeah, it was straight rolls. See how lucky I got. And then like we got like more and more into, okay, this is like how we play, but then we're like, okay, well, we can't just make them like less powerful because that wouldn't make any sense. So like even after we learned like, okay, these are how spells work and everything, I basically got level 20 in every class of spells.
Yeah, eventually. Or
level 9 spells of every class of spells.
Back to into the Pathfinder and into my current world, which is a lot better suited for that kind of thing. And to translate him, he was like a level like 60 character or something.
He like multi-class to hell. I think he was only like 3 classes. I think he's like level 37 or something like that. But like he didn't have like, he wasn't boxed out of, oh, you can only use wizard and sorcerer spells. He was, oh, I could use bard spells
because
and wizard spells.
A special spell book, and they've constructed, especially RPG worlds, items are DM's best friend because nobody can tell you you're doing them wrong.
So like he was this very unchained character we had, and so how we explained that, how we were like, oh, this is how he was so powerful, was for one, we had it set way in the past before the world split. And when the world split, that caused a big change in how magic worked, where like it was like much lesser type deals were.
It was more,
they
were back
Pathfinder.
Yeah, works.
They were just Pathfinder spells and how the Pathfinder game worked. And so there was an adventure we played where some guy brought him back to life because they needed someone who like could use the ancient way of magic. So like when he came back, he's very much this character of, oh, I work differently than all of you guys and I'm cool as hell because of it.
Yeah, and that was one of the few times we really get to play around with like really powerful characters.
Yeah, we,
in the bestiary. And,
yeah, we always start at like level 3 or whatnot.
Yeah,
we never,
I tend
start
to start at like level 3 because that's when classes actually start becoming useful.
Yeah, if we're like feeling lazy or whatever and want to just start playing the game, we'll start at level 1 because that's the easiest to just roll out a sheet real quick.
But it was fun to like let loose because very few games fully get to that level 20 area.
They either fizzle out or like the characters will die off or the games will just end, so we never get to get to like, oh, this is a level 20 character you have.
And so having stuff like you were super powerful, but like because you were a wizard, you were still like relatively squishy, and so having like the wild hunt fight you, and it was genuinely a difficult fight, was fun.
Yeah, no, it's really fun. We should play that game again.
I'm down.
But anyways, I think that it's about time to wrap it up.
Yeah, that'll just about do us for today.
Look, this was a pretty fun episode. I like this sort of deal. If you guys have like Pathfinder or RPG type worlds or anything,
let me know about it.
Let us know.
Curious.
Yeah, I want to see. We
like four
if
reels?
They're good, if they're good ideas, we will steal your ideas for our own games.
No, genuinely, if you have homebrew weapons and items and stuff, send them to me.
Yeah,
I love that shit.
Yeah, weapons, items. If you have like any ideas for like a cool area or a cool monster,
just
send
let us
that
know.
In because
we'll fun.
Fucking love that shit. If you can try to build it around the Pathfinder system, but if you don't feel like it or
just
you
don't
can't,
yeah,
just
fine.
Don't
no,
we could do the homework.
Or not.
Yeah.
And if you want to send that kind of stuff to us, the I guess best way would be through our email at theatomicemail@gmail.com. But you could also go to our Twitter at the Atomic Androids, I think.
The Atomic Androids. Or you could go to our Instagram at Atomic Android 2020. We've gotten a few trickle down followers, which I assume are you guys. If you're not listeners, that's confusing, but I'd like to say thank you for following us.
Yeah, no, genuinely, thanks.
We'll keep you just, updated up there. Best
speaking
we can.
Of updated, it's at Atomic Androids. Know the.
Yes. Oh, on Twitter. Yeah, it's at Twitter. Atomic Androids. But I think that just about does it for us.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next week. Bye.
Have a good day and a good sleep and a good night.
If you're sleeping, if this is like 9 a.m.
Well, when you do fall asleep tonight, good night, sleep tight, and don't let the bed bugs bite.
Play this bit again just before you go to sleep.
Yeah, go fast forward to the end of the episode. Play this bit again. I'll give you a cut. Just play this bit. I'll say no. And be ready for it. Okay, now. Hey, buddy. I see you're snuggling in there for a good night, and I just want you to know. I'm hoping you have a good night and a good little sleep, and have sweet dreams.
Is this supposed to be ASMR or just like nice?
It's well, now you've ruined it.
Oh. Go to sleep.
Well, good night. Go to sleep. Cut it off before the yen card, whatever it is.
Oh, first time we've acknowledged the yen cards. Bye.
Oh, bye. We coddle our old, and that's not on.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.